Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly are, or did it change history? Good evening. And welcome to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago.
We give each movie a memory score, and then we watch the movie to see whether or not it's better or worse than we remember. And then we score the movie again.
With me, as ever, is my son, Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
I'm very well. You?
So tired.
Yeah, I was sort of waiting. I was just trying to avoid the... Oh, we're tired, but we are tired, aren't we? But, you know, as always, I think tiredness is the point when you become a trooper. And so you, I think the show must go on. And maybe the best stuff comes out of that kind of that tiredness. Do you have an anecdote of the week this week? I know we're all waiting for one.
I think I did, but I can't remember now.
It was that good.
Yeah, it was so good, I can't remember.
Should we move straight on to our listener question then? Our question this week comes from Jonathan. Jonathan is in London, and Jonathan says he's been listening to the podcast since day one. So thank you very much for that, Jonathan. We really appreciate it. And he says, I have a daughter who sounds like she's the same age as Sam, and we are also thinking of doing a podcast. Do you have any ideas what it might be called, what certain themes might be? And he just simply signs off Jonathan R. Do we have any feedback for Jonathan?
I don't know, just try and make it as fun as possible. I mean, if you're doing the whole sort of parent-child duo, go for it. Make sure it's relevant to that. Not to say that we're not, that sounds terrible. But yeah, no, just have fun with it, really.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll be doing movies that they watch together or movies that they are thinking of watching or whatever. I wonder if they'll go for something similar to how we do it.
That'd be interesting, yeah. Maybe we can listen to it if they ever do.
Maybe. And maybe when the podcast is up and running, Jonathan, maybe you can drop us a line and we'll give you a plug on our very successful podcast. It is an excellent idea, parent. Child podcasts do seem to be a bit of a thing. So if you're out there, Jonathan, you listen to this, the Benefit of Hindsight podcast at gmail.com. Drop us a line when you get up and running. And we'll give off you all the support we can and maybe even give your podcast a plug. So thanks very much for that. It's not really a question, but we wish Jonathan R. and his daughter all the best in their podcast.
Yeah.
So Sam and I have been away and we have watched the 2007 classic Disney film Enchanted, which from memory I gave a score of 7. What did you give it, Sam?
I also gave it a 7. Yeah, we agreed on this one.
Interesting. As always, leading question to begin the podcast, do you think your score will change?
Quite possibly, yeah.
I think my score could possibly change, but I'm not going to give too much away at this stage. So let's begin where we always begin and jump straight into the casting of the Disney classic Enchanted. Talk me through, Sam, your view on the casting choices made over at Disney.
Is season 3 of the podcast the Patrick Dempsey season?
I think it is, yeah. I think.
Okay,
it is,
good. Yeah. That's fine. Yeah, yeah.
Benefit of Hindsight podcast season 3, sponsored by... Patrick Dempsey. How many nice. Dempsey movies have we done then?
He's in Transformers 3.
Of course he is, yeah.
Yeah.
So 2 of the 4 movies that we've done in season 3. 50%. Okay, yeah,
that's
maybe.
Pretty good.
That's true, yeah, fair enough. Yeah. So what did you make of the cast?
It's quite a good cast, actually. I feel like I do say that a lot. It's very Disney-esque and very up and coming in a way. I know Patrick Dempsey's quite well known,
yeah.
And Idina Menzel's quite well known too. Amy Adams, apparently this put her as a household name, mm-hmm. which is very strange looking back, because to me she was just always Amy Adams.
Yeah.
She was always a big one. I think it's got a very wide variety of cast. I think from all over the world and other media, I think. Mm-hmm. So they've got people from Harry Potter at the time, and then Patrick Dempsey of Transformers 3 future fame.
Yeah.
or maybe past frame. I can't remember. Past, yeah.
Yeah.
So no, I think it's very varied and full of talent at the same time. Like, I don't think you would see this particular cast in any other movie other than Enchanted.
Yeah, I think the casting is very strong. I agree with you completely. And what I like is, I think it would be, I was thinking when I was watching it, this would be such a fun movie to cast. Because yeah. you've kind of got Amy Adams, and we'll come back to her later, as the kind of traditional Disney princess and everything else. But then you've got Patrick Dempsey, who's just going to play the chisel-jawed, handsome, wealthy, single father. Clearly based on, if you've ever seen Miracle on 34th Street,
yeah,
basically the same thing, right? With his slightly precocious daughter. So that's nice. And then you've got the nice but dim prince. That's going to be fun to cast. You've got the girlfriend of Patrick Dempsey that has to be just nice enough to like, but, bad enough for him to have to leave. The Wicked Witch and all that.
You don't want her to win, but exactly. Don't want her to lose.
And I just thought, what a fun movie this would be to cast. And I think they probably got it exactly right. I think they got it exactly as they wanted to do. But I thought I think Amy Adams is the heart of the movie.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, maybe there's a few people who could do the role, but I think she brings something to it that's just the childish wonder and joy of it all, yeah.
She is just a joy in this movie.
Absolutely. One thing that did sort of bother me about the casting, Timothy Spall, who's a great actor, but as somebody from Harry Potter, why did it come across that he was just doing Peter Pettigrew as Snape? And it felt like that's all his performance was for the most part.
Yeah, I think sometimes actors get cast in roles because of a thing they've done before, and the casting director and the director are like, Timothy, that thing you were doing over there, just do that. I mean, that's how Ricky Gervais gets cast.
That's true.
So Ricky,
I thought you just showed up.
That thing you do, do that again. And I think that's true, and it seems to be particularly true of British actors in American movies.
Yeah.
If you look,
that's definitely true. Yeah.
If you look at like when particularly like 80s and 90s action movies, where they always have these kind of British actors playing the baddie, they're like, do that thing, which is be all statesmanlike and whatever. And that's how they seem to get cast.
That's an interesting point that I've never really thought about. Yeah. I did really like James Marsden in this film, though.
Yes.
I think he plays that role quite well because he's the very stereotypical looks like a hero kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my favorite moment with him was when he was stood on top of the bus and there was a Superman Returns logo behind him, which of course he's also in.
Yeah, made me laugh.
It's quite funny. Yeah.
It was a really, really good joke. He's another one as well where you have to like him enough and at the same time you have to recognize that he's actually a bit of an idiot, a bit narcissistic, really. But he pulls it off so well, he's very good in it.
Yeah.
And I thought Susan Sarandon was great as the kind of evil stepmother. Some people are born for certain roles, and she was born for that.
Yeah, I'm torn with her in a way because I don't know. I think the movie is basically Disney princess trapped in real world.
Yeah.
And I feel like she comes in just very much at the end as, there's something I kind of want to say, but I don't know if I'm really allowed to say it. It's sort of a detract from the podcast. Me and a friend think that the end of The Batman, the one with Robert Pattinson,
mm-hmm.
is very much a studio said, we need action to end this film.
Yeah.
So you can see where the film ends and then all of a sudden Batman has to fight people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just chucked on at the end. This kind of feels like the same with Enchanted, where the story has come to a close. Hang on, we need something. She turns into a dragon. And it felt a bit glued on and her role just kind of thrown in at the end there. But I did appreciate it, but it felt like that in a way for me.
Yeah, I do agree with what you've just said, in the sense that I do feel like there was the ending isn't entirely satisfactory. It's a bit tacked on. Everything in this movie appears to be a reference to something that's happened in another Disney movie. So there's references to dwarves. You've got the birds and stuff making the house clean and whatever. And you know, even some of the songs are similar. That you, but I, as I recall, I can't remember a baddie that turns a female baddie that turns into a dragon.
Yeah, and I think as well, the twist of a woman saves the day is quite a new thing as well.
Yes,
but I like that in this as well, definitely.
Well, I mean, I mean, many good things can be said about it, and I think the cast carry the movie. I think the script is a brilliant idea. I think, you know, if you are in Disney in 2007 and the writer comes along and says, I've got an idea, here's my pitch, Disney princess, but in the real world, you're going to go, yeah, okay, great. And you can write that and it will be a really good idea. But I do think that the combination of these actors, and it's not a big cast, are able to really pull this thing off and make it much better than what was already quite a good script.
Yeah. Just to add on the cast, and I know it's not an actual person, I see it more of a character. This is one of those films where I see New York as a character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a few out there where you can watch it and be like, okay, New York is such a part of this movie that it becomes a character. And I think some of the extras, even down to the concept of the rats and the pigeons as the animals, and even the park, New York is a character in this film. And I think you could write this film wherever, but it doesn't work anywhere other than New York. It has to be in that setting. So I kind of consider that a character.
And New York is, I think that's true, isn't it? New York is often a character in movies. Yeah. I mean, we have, well, I mean, I'm trying to think of ones that we have watched. A Night at the Museum, where New York becomes a character. Cloverfield, to a certain extent. I think New York is that kind of city, isn't it? It's like, it's a bit like London and Paris. As soon as you say them, they become kind of the movies. Yeah. This movie only works in New York, as you rightly say.
And I think once you know where it is and you can see all of these sort of recognizable things, even if you've never been to the places, mm-hmm. you know it's New York. It's so familiar. Yeah.
It'd be great if there was, great's too strong a word, but it'd be super interesting if, let's say, this was a British movie and a Disney princess ends up in London. That becomes a very different film, right? And so the New York thing is, yeah, it's absolutely true. And when they're going through Central Park and singing all the songs and those kinds of things and doing all those set pieces, it works because of the backgrounds.
Yeah. I did think, though, just to bring it back to Cloverfield, that if any movie deserves a crossover, it's this one with Cloverfield.
Absolutely. Can you imagine that? Like, yeah.
Like the early scenes where she's in the massive dress in New York, I thought, wouldn't it be really funny if there was also a giant monster going around at the same time?
maybe there could have been a crossover where at the end the wicked stepmother turns into a big monster that just happens to be the root of Cloverfield.
It's all connected.
It is. It's all connected in there somewhere. We talked briefly about script, but it is good fun, right? It is a good fun movie.
Yeah, I think it's funny where it needs to be, but also the story is there and the story works, mm-hmm. and it has to, yeah.
And it is a pretty straightforward story, but often they're the best ones, right?
Yeah, I think the concept of it is, and the idea is very straightforward, but I think there's little twists and turns along the way that make you sort of see it for what it is, and it adds to it. So the sideline of the two divorcees getting back together, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
the idea of the ball being sort of sprinkled around throughout the story and then leading to the ball, it's quite clever. So it feels like, in a way, it's a bit of the story is a tree, you know, it's a tree, but there's branches that lead somewhere else,
and it's,
that's way too deep for Enchanted.
No, but it's very, very self-aware as well. It's great fun, I think, when people are able to laugh at themselves and pastiche themselves. And I know that everybody, even at Disney, is probably laughing. And there's probably loads of inside jokes that we just haven't seen, because, you know, I wouldn't consider myself a Disney aficionado. I was going to say earlier on, and I stopped myself because I didn't know how to say it. When this movie began, I was watching it on the rewatch. I was about 5 minutes in, and I thought, I wonder why we came and saw this.
I know, I don't know if it was a one that the theoretical sister picked, sort of would make sense, but I don't. Did this come out Christmas and New Year's time? Because that would just be a given that we'd see it then.
Yeah, I don't know. Let me just check its release date. No, it came out in October.
Oh, okay.
So kind of a pre-Christmas movie. I just really struck me as an odd choice, but I think you said last week that we might have been a bit late when we went to see this movie, or it was late when we went to see it, and maybe it was a bit of an afterthought and it just happened to be on. But I didn't remember that bit at the beginning.
No.
I didn't remember it being quite as long as it was.
Yeah, I think in my head it was a bit shorter than that, and it felt a bit more set-up-y than it did. I don't remember the bit with the troll. That felt new to me. But I did sort of remember the rest of it, yeah.
Yeah, so it just struck me as, I mean, it just struck me as quite eclectic for, you know, I mean, it's difficult to be terribly self-critical, but if you're not a fan of blockbusters between 2002 and 2015, they're probably not going to listen to our podcast. But this one, it just felt a little bit different of all the films that we've done so far.
Yeah, absolutely. But it didn't stop me from watching it, though. I still managed to watch all of it and enjoy it.
Yeah, I was going to say it didn't stop me from enjoying it either. I thought it was great fun. And I really enjoyed the songs and the music and the soundtrack. I've had one of them in my head all week. I can't get rid of it. And I've never been a fan of Disney songs. I always find them painfully cheesy and awful. But there's one, I've had that little dum 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 ba dum bum ba dum bum going through my head all week and I can't get rid of it. What about you? What did you make of the music and indeed the soundtrack?
I liked it. I don't remember much of the score soundtrack, but I mean, I don't know if it matters so much, but actually, no, that's not true. I do, because it's got little jingles of the songs at specific moments, and I think that works very well, especially it's not... You have to look at the clues to figure out what's going on. It's you have to hear the clues. So there's little bits of you'll hear That's How You Know playing when she realizes who she's in love with. And I think that works so well. And the song is so memorable that it sticks in your head and makes you think of it in that moment, which is exactly what it wants you to do. And that is just a perfect soundtrack. That's exactly how it should work and why it works. Famously, I do like musicals. And I don't know if this one would be one that I would immediately pick, but I don't. I wouldn't never pick it, if that makes sense. I do like it.
Yeah. The composer of the score, Alan Menken, he is Mr. Disney, though, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he has done all of those things. Aladdin, I was going to say The Lion King. I'm not sure about that one. But certainly, you know, let's have a little look at his little list of things he's done. Aladdin is definitely one of his. Beauty and the Beast is one of his. You know, he is the guy. Did you also know, though, that he is the Captain America, the First Avenger composer?
Ah, I didn't know that, but I suppose in a way there is a slight musical in that, so it does make sense, yeah.
Yeah. You know when you do little deep dives into things because you're doing, in inverted commas, research for the podcast, right? I was going through the... soundtracks that this fella Alan Menken has done, and some of them are, you know, really interesting, very varied and everything else, but I noticed that he had done, presumably correctly, the soundtrack for the live action version of Aladdin.
Oh, okay.
But I learned the live action version of Aladdin is directed by Guy Ritchie.
Yeah, I've seen that.
I did not know it. Yeah. And I have not seen that movie, but it made me go, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? I just didn't know that. So maybe that's we talked about live action remakes. It's just a slightly better cartoon.
Yeah.
But I did like the music, and I also liked the fact that the music was kind of, I think if you're the composer, I think he probably enjoyed his opportunity to do Alan Menken's greatest hits.
It's interesting that you mention some of those points. Especially about the animation, because I realised this film can fall onto the Cavill scale and the newly introduced Sully scale, because it's a bit of both.
It can.
Which I thought was quite cool. I don't know how often that's going to happen.
I don't know either. Okay, so let's do it. Cavill scale?
To be honest, I think it's got a lot of subtle CGI that works quite well, so I'm going to give it an 8.
Nice. And on the Sully scale?
Well, that has to be a 10 because of what it is. It's paying homage to all of the originals and the classics whilst making it look new and fresh. So that's quite good, yeah.
I'm not going to deviate from what you've just said. I agree. 10, Sully, 8, Cavill.
Cool.
If you don't know what they are, I'm not going to explain them. Go back and listen to previous episodes of the podcast.
You're not a real
Sully
fan.
Scale. the Cavill scale. We have so many maneuvers as well that I've forgotten what some of them are.
Yeah.
Although I suspect there'll be a new one by the end of this podcast. Yeah. Hey, do you want to know how much money it made at the box office?
I think I saw it earlier, but forgot. So, yeah.
Well, it was made on a budget of $85 million, which is pretty good, you know, of Disney. That's not you know, I think, you know, this is one of those movies where if it hadn't worked out, it could go straight to video.
Oh, yeah.
That was a thing back in those days. So what's the worst that can happen? It goes straight to DVD and we'll make a few quid at Christmas. But it, because the movie, I think, turned out pretty well, they put it out there. And it made $340 million. So it wasn't a huge kind of hit in that sense, yeah. But it certainly made an awful lot of money. And it was very, very well reviewed. And I think that probably helped it. I mean, it, you know, consistently getting high scores from some of the bigger players in film reviews. So, yeah, it did well.
It's quite funny because I feel like back then, if it had been a straight-to-DVD or video deal, the sequel probably would have been like that. But instead, it was a straight-to-Disney Plus sequel.
Yeah, I didn't know there was a sequel until, again, doing this research.
I've seen it, but I don't remember it. I think it's a bit of a boring plot that just let's make a sequel.
But I do think what is interesting about the sequel is, which I've never seen, is that actually it's essentially the same cast.
Yeah, I think the daughter might be different though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's great that they managed to get you know, Amy Adams, Patrick Dempsey, Idina Menzel, and James Marsden.
Yeah, that's the one.
Back into it. I think it's great. I wouldn't have expected that because, you know, they have all gone on to do, you know, they're big stars in their own right.
Especially after Transformers 3.
Yeah, especially after the genius of Transformers 3. We always do Oscars, Academy Awards. How many Academy Awards was it nominated for?
Two, maybe.
It was nominated for three.
Ah, you almost said three.
Would you like to guess the categories for which it was nominated?
Soundtrack?
Yes. Ish.
Screenplay.
No.
Oh.
I ask because it's a leading question, because it is the only film to have three nominations for best song.
Oh, okay.
So no other movie has had the three nominations in the same category ever.
Wow.
And ironically, it didn't win any of them.
Okay.
So I'd love to know what won. I can't be bothered to have a look. But yeah, and it was nominated for so many awards, Critics' Choice, Golden Globes, but it didn't win very many awards, which is a real shame.
It is, yeah.
Because I do think it's kind of, you know, better than that. But yeah, imagine the grand irony of being nominated, the most nominated film for songs, and you didn't win.
Ouch.
Yeah, you got 3 out of 5 chance of winning, and you didn't. There must be many pieces of trivia, however, on this masterpiece.
There wasn't anything that interesting, to be honest.
Great, let's move on then.
Okay. The concept of this movie started back in the 1990s, but it was originally going to be an R-rated film. And I think that definitely a completely different audience, but I think that could have worked quite well. And I would have watched it, not back then.
I can definitely see that there's a good movie in that idea somewhere as well. That kind of fish out of water movie, but much darker, would have been funny.
I feel like it could exist as one of those cheap Amazon Prime movies. There's another one actually that I think we should do. Have you heard of the Velocipasta?
No, I have not.
It's a pastor from a church, but he's a velociraptor.
Is that a real thing?
It is, yeah. I don't know if that's completely the name of it. I think benefit of foresight, absolutely.
Oh yeah, we absolutely have to do the this genius.
There's a few Transformers knockoff films as well. I think we should do.
I do love a good knockoff. Maybe when we run out of movies to watch and we move into the benefit of foresight, as well as doing benefit of foresight, we should do knockoff movies.
Yeah.
Because there are some absolute pearlers out there, aren't there?
There's probably some we could rewatch.
Definitely some we could rewatch. Yeah. What we could do is we could do a podcast. We're off topic again. We could do a podcast in which we watch the original movie and then we watch the knockoff, and then decide which one we think is best, and see if we can ever find a movie where the knockoff is actually better.
Oh, I'd love it if there was a Cloverfield knockoff.
Oh, I'm sure there is. Yeah, there must be. There always is.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a podcast in there somewhere. That's the one you should be doing, Jonathan R. in London. How dare you?
The background music on the television in the hotel room is from past Disney movies. I didn't notice that. That's one of those things.
I didn't notice that.
Unless you're a Disney aficionado, wouldn't know.
That's what. Yeah, I think there's probably, if you're a Disney fan, and by golly, there are some,
yeah.
You'd be watching this film with absolute glee, going, oh, I know that, yeah. And I know that. I mean, I notice things like, oh, it's a red apple.
Yeah.
Because everybody knows a red apple. I'd probably joke about a slipper and things like that. But I'm sure there are just loads of little Easter eggs. What great fun it would be to know what they are.
Back on the music, I think this could have been a disaster, but Weird Al Yankovic was considered to write the songs.
Wow. That would be... Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I'm going to go disaster.
I think in some cases it could work, but I don't think he would have done it as serious as what we got.
Well, in a way, I'm kind of glad that they did go with you know, Mr. Disney himself, because I think that gives the movie... I think that the fact that the songs are good and the visuals are good and in keeping with a Disney style, it kind of ramps up the irony, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
And the sort of pastiche of the whole thing. Imagine if you had rubbish songs. It's just not going to be the same, is it?
It's like the opposite of Flash Gordon.
Yeah, it's like the anti-Flash. Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Apparently, filming was hampered at times due to Patrick Dempsey's fans, which is... I've put that one in there specifically because I don't know why they use the word hampered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But presumably, the fans as well were on the back of his magnificent performance in Transformers 3.
In the future.
In the future. Yeah. In a parallel universe.
Yeah.
Maybe the fans were in anticipation of his magnificent performance in Transformers 3.
That's the one. That would explain why there was like random shots of Autobots in the background.
That would explain why I did see Bumblebee at some point as well.
That's true, yeah. Even though it turns out Patrick Dempsey was the villain.
Yeah, hiding in plain sight as always.
Yeah. That was an anecdote of the week that I could have had.
Go on then, do it now.
Okay, I saw there was an Amazon truck, which was a semi-truck, I think that's what you call it, which is essentially... what looked essentially as big as the Optimus Prime truck, and it was just on like a residential area, and I was like, yeah, there's no way he would actually be in disguise, that thing's huge.
There you go. Absolutely, yeah. And it's so true. Did you know that Ashley Jensen's in this movie?
Is she?
No.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
I just wanted to drop her name in after we got the giggles for about 20 minutes about Ashley Jensen last week. Do you have any controversial opinions on this movie?
I do. I've got two.
Oh, kind okay. of. Do we need to explain controversial opinions for the new listeners? It's okay. Yeah, let's do this. If you're new to the podcast, you've joined us for Enchanted. Sam's controversial opinions work like this. Sam will give me his controversial opinion about the movie or something related to the movie. If you hear it, I've judged that it wasn't that controversial and you're allowed. If you don't hear it and you simply hear me say, no, it was far too controversial, we don't want to get cancelled. So you've got two controversial opinions this week. So let's hear controversial opinion number one.
The first one is...
no.
Oh, I worked so hard.
You just burst into musicals. Pointless.
It felt on brand.
It was unnecessary.
On theme. Okay.
I know it's unnecessary. Far too much theatre.
Okay. I'll tone it down. Okay.
I look mean now.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
For legal reasons, that was a joke. The second one, well, I don't know if this is my fault, but there is nothing I can come up with more controversial than Nathaniel's taxi outfit. Yikes.
It's going to have to stay in.
Yeah.
Because I cannot recall what Nathaniel's taxi outfit is.
I don't know if I want to describe it, but it was very stereotypical New York racist taxi driver, and it felt a bit blackfaced in a way. So,
oh dear.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That was the movie, not me.
So your controversial opinion is that somebody else had been controversial, so I think we can allow it. So we're not going to get cancelled for that. The movie itself might eventually... get cancelled.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny how things have changed though in the last so quickly about things like that?
Yeah, I mean, they wouldn't do it today, that's for sure.
I mean, this movie, I suppose, if you wanted to go quite deep into the movie, which of course we don't really want to do because it's just Disney's Enchanted, but It does go down those typical Disney princess tropes where they make their own dresses, they clean everything. And it does so, I suppose, in a mildly ironic way, but it also doesn't.
Yeah. I've just realised something. I had a point, and it was a bit of a gripe, that why is she wearing the most plain dress to the ball? But I've just realised it's because it shows that she's become a part of the real world, whereas everyone else... Yeah, so that's my bad.
No, that's a good spot, actually. I didn't get that either. I suppose now you mention it, it's so obvious, but I did not get that.
No, because of all the dresses that she's made, why would she wear something so plain? But no, it makes a lot of sense, actually.
We didn't mention this, but when we're doing cast, but I think we've probably mentioned it now. I didn't know until I checked that it was Julie Andrews doing the narration.
Ah, I wouldn't have thought about that. Yeah, that's cool.
So it's good. So is Mary Poppins doing all the narration, which is a lovely little touch.
That is. I like that. Yeah.
So we should have mentioned it, but it just didn't occur to me to mention that.
Speaking of things that I didn't quite like, and it pains me to bring this one up, you know when we watched The Hunger Games, and there's that bit at the end that is kind of controversial, where all of a sudden, now there can't be two winners anymore, blah, 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 and it's a bit, serves the story, but it's a bit cheap of a move. This movie has one of those.
It does. Explain it to me.
This movie has, during the ball, they go, now it's time for the dance, where you dance with someone you didn't invite. It's like, okay, that's clearly just a way of making them all dance with the people they should dance with. And that annoyed me. Mm-hmm. It's just a stupid concept made up for film reasons.
I didn't get it. I wouldn't have spotted it. But now you mention it, it is like implausible. Now you mention it, they've invented a tradition that we're all supposed to just go, yeah, that's a tradition.
That makes sense.
There isn't. It's just made up for the purposes of the movie. Yeah. I hadn't realised that, but it's a very good spot.
And before we finish, this film makes our second Wilhelm scream of season 3, because we didn't count before season 3.
Excellent. Okay, I you're good at that. Thanks. I never catch them. I never catch the Wilhelm.
Apparently there screams. Was a Goofy scream as well, but I missed that one.
Again, you know, these are things that we wouldn't get. Like, you can imagine a cinema full of Disney fans.
Yeah.
Nudging each other, Goofy scream. Did you? And what would have been internet forums around about that time?
Definitely.
But there's page after page after page of tiny little Easter eggs that only certain people would get.
Yeah.
I think I'm ready to move on to my score now.
Me too.
So I chose the movie.
You did.
And I gave it a 7.
You did.
So I gave it 7 originally, and I think that's a pretty solid score. I think I'd stay there at 7 because I did like it and it's better than average. But I think I'm going to kind of invoke the Cardellini maneuver.
Okay.
And which is, for those of you who don't know, any movie that features Linda Cardellini gets an additional point. But I think we'll just use it for Amy Adams. So I'm going to give it a score of 8 out of 10.
Okay. This is the awkward part of the podcast where ditto. Because I think I gave it a 7 originally. It's definitely still a 7. You can enjoy it as whatever age, whatever gender, whoever you are, because it just works on every level. And also Cardellini maneuver for Amy Adams, so it's an 8 out of 10. So we've agreed both scores.
Excellent. And for exactly the same reasons as well, which is perfectly entertaining. So it's gone from an overall 7 to an overall 8, which I think is actually a pretty solid score.
Yeah, I only wish they'd made a sequel sooner.
Yeah, me too. I didn't even know it existed. I'm going to watch it.
Okay.
I'm actually going to make the effort of watching it. What would be your one-word review of this movie?
Can I say enchanting?
You can.
Cool.
Because I'm going to go with joyful.
Okay. If not, I would have said delightful, actually.
Excellent. All right. So it must be your turn to choose the movie for next week.
It is. I've chosen a pivotal film.
Wow, okay.
In our timeline, I want to say. I don't know if you'll remember it much. I don't know if you'll care that much. But this was interesting. So way back when, it must have been 2012, we went to the cinema wholeheartedly, convincingly, to go and see the Aardman film Pirates. I think it's an adventure with scientists.
Okay.
And we were going to see that film because it's Aardman and we love Aardman and that's what we were doing. Mm-hmm. We got there and thought, it's going to be full of kids. Let's go and see The Hunger Games. And we went and saw The Hunger Games instead. And that was that. I always look back on that as the moment that it was, yes, we can see a kids film. Let's see something a bit more young adult.
Okay, awesome. I don't remember that, but I'm happy to agree. And I do remember going to see The Hunger Games.
Oh, cool. The Hunger Games is something that I actually revisit every November because all of the other ones came out in November, and I would go for my birthday, which I'm going to keep vague about the specific date. But I always watch these in November, and I wanted to do it last year, but it never happened, just for whatever reason. So we're going to go for the 2012... original Hunger Games, which, by the way, didn't come out in November, but you know why I chose November. But weirdly enough, though, my memory of seeing this film was that it was violent and scary. So it was one of those where I went home and, oh, good night, go to bed in the dark. Oh, but I've just watched children get murdered. But I think, basing it off that, I'd probably maybe give it a 6. But then I did read the books and I've enjoyed it since. So I'm going to just go with a 7 from memory. And give it like a decent score for that, I think. Yeah,
I think this was one that I don't actually remember terribly well, mm-hmm. and it certainly didn't enthuse me enough to then pursue the many sequels or go and read the books or anything like that. So I think I'm going to have to be quite low because I'd give it a 3.
Okay,
which means on many Hunger Games boards around the world, I'm about to get into deep trouble, but yeah, my memory of it is fine, but not particularly impressive. I'm going to give it a 3 out of 10.
Okay. It'll be interesting to see which version we end up watching, because there's a more violent version.
We should definitely try and watch the original theatrical release that we would have seen.
That's true, actually, yeah. I don't know which one that would have been.
No, neither do I. Well, I'm sure we can find it, so... There we are. Hey, do you know what day it is today?
Is it Free Caramel Apple Day?
It is Free Caramel Apple Day.
Enchanted
exactly,
reference.
That's what it is.
I actually do know what day it is, though.
Go on.
It's Saxophone Day.
Brilliant. I love that.
Yeah.
We've done, you know when we do our podcast and we do what day it is today?
Yeah.
Okay. And Saxophone Day, by the way, I absolutely love. Okay. Yeah. Because, you know. Why would you? But it is also the International Day for Preventing the Exploitation of the Environment in War and Armed Conflict.
Oh.
Day, which is a bit of a mouthful. I don't normally celebrate, but I do know that we've referenced that before.
I think we have, yeah.
Somewhere in the depths of our podcast, we're now to the point where we've now done the podcast on the same exact day. So if you're out there and you celebrate International Day for Preventing the Exploitation of the Environment in War and Armed Conflict and you're celebrating, please do enjoy and have one on us.
Play the saxophone too.
Yeah, maybe have the saxophone playing in the background. Maybe it could be sort of playing like Careless Whisper.
That's the exact one, yeah.
I mean, that is the only. I think if you had to hum a saxophone moment,
yeah, that's it.
Would that be yours?
I think it would have to be. Yeah, I can't think of anything else. Actually,
I've got.
I tell a lie. The radio sort of played a bit of a saxophone symphony, and one of them was Lisa Simpson in the Simpsons intro. That's another one I would think of.
Yeah, and the only other one I had was Baker Street. Famously is saxophone. So it's fascinating. There's this instrument out there which is incredibly popular and famous. We can name 3: Baker Street, Careless Whisper, and the Simpsons theme.
Yeah, that's cool.
We don't generally celebrate Saxophone Day, though, do we?
No, not at all.
No, not at all. Not always. Well, anyway, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for all of your contributions through email. We will get to them eventually. And we'll be back next week with our thoughts and opinions on rewatching the 2012 classic movie, The Hunger Games 2012. My goodness, that's a long time ago. Oh, that's craziness. That is craziness.
They're still going.
And I know, they're still going. Yeah. And we look forward to sharing those thoughts and opinions with you, our listener. Please do get in touch at the Benefit Findsight Podcast at gmail.com. And remember, if you are out there and you want to listen to a father and child doing a podcast, we are the only one that you should be interested in.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed.
So if anybody out there has had that idea who just happens to be more famous than we are, and just remember you heard it here first. Being original and best is important.
True. Enough said. And I for one agree with him.
And I for one agree with him. And happy saxophone day.
Yeah. I didn't know you had a saxophone.
Didn't know you could play saxophone. Oh, well, thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye more.
Bye.
Hindsight will see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?